charges rather than get bailed out. And wow. They are a small bank, and this is a documentary, if you like, but it plays like a thriller.
Oh, cool.
Because we're interviewing the actual people. We're going through the process with them, and it took 10 years. They're talking to the current DA who brought the charges, Siren Spence Jr., and he's giving his side of it. They're talking to the family, and the father is now 80, and he's talking about what they were doing, who knew what and where, and there are some fascinating aspects. I found the whole film fascinating, but for instance, during the court proceedings, they actually had a chart of the main office and who was sitting where. The contention being, how can you deny knowledge of something that was happening in your own office if you were sitting 2 feet, several feet away? Things of that nature.
Right.
Because there were certain people, without giving too much away, in the film that were, or in reality, who were committing, criminal acts.
Right, right. And they're getting other people who were just letting it happen rather than... And
were they letting it happen? Did they know about it? And
right,
the
right.
larger question is, now, why did this small, a few branch family bank, right, which serves primarily the Chinese-American clientele, because
right.
that's what it was established for, they were targeted where much larger, huge conglomerates, et cetera,
Goldman Sachs,
or whatever adjective you like, were not only not prosecuted, they were bailed out.
Right. right.
And it answers those questions. Really fascinating.
It does. You get the answers to that. Nice.
You do not have to have any, it's not a history lesson, although it is.
Yeah.
It really does play like intel, because
right.
that's what it was established for. They were targeted where much larger, huge conglomerates, et cetera,
Goldman Sachs,
or whatever adjective you like, were not only not prosecuted, they were bailed out.
Right. right.
And it answers those questions. Really fascinating.
It does. You get the answers to that. Nice.
You do not have to have any, it's not a history lesson, although it is.
Yeah.
It really does play like...
Oh, is the slant on this, is it trying to be... objective, or is it, as good as it can? I mean, every film has got some bias to it.
Certainly, it has its point of view.
Okay.
Which it has to have, and it has a definite point of view. I don't think anything, any sort of enjoyment or understand, some genuine satisfaction for the viewer isn't detracted by that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, one isn't left sort of being pounded over the head by one point of view.
Good. Okay.
And they allow, the filmmakers, we're interviewing the DA and people involved in the case and their perspective and why they did what they did. And, then the other attorneys are talking about, all of that is happening. But it's also the toll on the family, et cetera. I mean, it took years.
Right.
And really is quite something. And I think if
USA Radio News.
The bottom line of it is, if this works, and it's still a big if, but if this works, it is going to make the entire world safer because it's just going to stop the North Koreans. It's going to stop the Iranians because they can't get away with it doing it at home, even under the ridiculous agreement that was made in Vienna.
Retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North with his perspective on what will take place after a meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. That meeting is expected to take place sometime between now and May. Some of the 911 calls are starting to be released in the Florida school shooting. Take a listen to this one from a frantic mother.
911, what is your emergency?
Hi, my daughter just texted me from school. She's at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in Parkland, and she says there's an active shooter. She says she's behind the desk right now, but the shots were close.
This is USA Radio News.
Life needs to be enjoyed with family and friends, to laugh and to share. But tragically, addiction to alcohol and drugs can ruin that. So, if drugs and alcohol are a problem in your life or the life of someone you care about, then isn't it time to make a change? The Watershed Addiction Treatment Programs have been offering life-changing results since 1998. The Watershed has successfully treated and helped over 50,000 people get their lives back. So if you're ready to make your change and be free from addiction to alcohol and drugs, then it is time for you to make a change. The Watershed knows how to help you recover and promises to help you begin your change. Your new life can begin right now with just one simple text on your mobile phone. Text the word RECOVER to 474747. That's the word RECOVER to 474747. And a caring Watershed treatment professional will help you make your change. Do it now. Just text the word RECOVER to 474747 or visit us at thewatershed.com.
A Milwaukee, Wisconsin high school teacher turned in her 17-year-old son after the boy was allegedly committing a crime. Now, this begs the question, should a parent or would you as a parent call the police on your child? Well, Larry Wingett is author of the book, Your Child, Your Responsibility. He says this problem with this child began way before the child turned 17.
A 17-year-old kid that is out of control was out of control at 17 months old. And the lesson for every parent out there is to get in control of your child and start to impose consequences so they learn good behavior from the very beginning.
And finally, most Americans will be moving their clocks forward this Sunday morning as daylight savings time begins, although two states, Florida and Massachusetts, are looking to end that tradition. A bill to allow Florida to remain on daylight savings time year-round has been sent to Governor Rick Scott and has yet to be signed. And Massachusetts is also considering a bill as well. Currently, Hawaii and Arizona are the only two states to not move their clocks ahead. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Since the start of 2018, at least 20 police officers across the United States have died while on active duty, with 14 of those deaths caused by gunfire. Now, to put this in perspective, in 2016, roughly 135 cops died, making it the deadliest year for police officers. Sergeant Sean Larkin is with A&E's Live PD. He talks about why this may be happening.
You know, it's a wide range of things. This is an alarming number for number of officers killed by gunfire so far this year. And it's a wide range of things. There are incidents like this, a 911 call. They're responding to disturbances. They're doing investigations on an auto theft was one of these situations. One of the things that sticks out to me, though, is of the 14 officers killed, or these 14 incidents where officers were killed by gunfire. In five of these incidents, multiple officers were actually shot.
Genetic testing company 23andMe has been given federal approval to sell at-home test kits to detect three different types of breast cancer gene mutations. A 23andMe spokesman said the tests for the three mutations will be added in the upcoming months to kits. Dr. Nicole Sapphire is a radiologist. She joined Fox News to talk about what you need to remember if you do, in fact, use this type of genetic testing.
Well, so if you do decide to take this test, yeah, and if you get a positive result, you likely are of Ashkenazi Jewish descent, because really only the people who will get a positive result will be of that descent.
Okay.
You get that. Don't freak out. Don't get overly anxious. You need to call your medical provider. You want to get genetic counseling because you want to know what this means.
For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutterton Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, good afternoon on a Friday, actually a beautiful Friday, sunny, warm. At least if it's sunny, we can't complain, correct? And let's see what is happening on this beautiful day as far as our forecast. Tomorrow is high of about 45 degrees and sunny. Mostly clear tomorrow night, and again, we can expect sunny weather on Sunday. Now, we've heard about another storm. On Sunday night, there is a chance, about a 30% chance of rain and snow, and then a chance of snow because the low should be down around 28 degrees. So, again, be very careful if you're driving on roads because it'll get very black ice is not fun. And then by Monday, there's about a 40% chance of rain and snow, 38 degrees on Monday night. Again, 30% chance of rain or snow, and again, chance of snow on Tuesday. They're all over the place with this latest storm. Obviously, for those of you who are still without power, it doesn't make much difference, and there are still many of our neighbors here in Hunterdon County. I don't know if I should say many, but there's certainly a substantial number who are without power, still without power. So if you have any older friends or neighbors, check in on them because this has been tough for a lot of people. So I'm Pat Smits, and today is March 9th. I can't believe it. If you had asked me, I would have said, oh, it must be around the 3rd. So we're here, my program, It's the Law. I'm just going to kind of give you some of what's happening in cases and the news briefs. One of the problems when a Superior Court judge has been on a roll of late with a judge dismissing charges that she hindered her boyfriend's apprehension, and the Supreme Court ending her suspension from the bench after nearly 5 years. Unfortunately, she still faces an inquiry by the Advisory Committee on Judicial Conduct over her 2013 harboring arrest, and some see her as vulnerable to penalties. And believe me, in New Jersey, judges are held to a much higher standard. And so this is something that, is going to be probably, some people are surprised it hasn't been career ending, but she has been suspended for 5 years. Well, one of the interesting things for those of us who are attorneys is that the attorney, professor, activist, and author of American Values, Lessons Learned from My Family, this Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be keynote speaker at the 2018 annual meeting and convention. That's in Atlantic City, and he joins a roster of over, I should say, other nationally respected speakers that are going to be speaking at the convention. And the in any event, it's mainly open to lawyers, so if you're not a lawyer, you might not be interested, but the roster of speakers additionally includes judges and justices from nearly every division of the federal and state judiciary and many, many other experts. The conference is held in May at the Borgata, May 16th to 18th in Atlantic City, so that, that should be very interesting. I'm sure it will be packed. So the those of you who are interested in the Uber suit or take Uber, anyway, a New York Bay's federal judge sent a major antitrust price-fixing lawsuit against Uber Technologies into arbitration, and apparently did so reluctantly, but dismissed the case from court based on there must be numerous contracts that require arbitration, and that the judge, in fact, sent that antitrust price-fixing lawsuit to arbitration. So that in arbitration, when you have to go to arbitration, there are very limited areas of appeal. And, of course, you know, the problem with so many arbitration clauses in contracts is that people sign them not realizing how limited their rights are. So the New Jersey's longstanding public policy favoring informed consent in agreements to arbitrate, as in any contract, is still good law. Following this decision, United States Supreme Court, this is a decision by the United States Supreme Court in Kindred Nursing Center LP versus Clark. And they said that the New Jersey State Bar Association, in its amicus brief to the Supreme Court, so that this arbitration is still something that you cannot sign an arbitration clause without being very careful as to what it says and to protect yourself if at all possible. There was approved for publication DCP&P case, and this was the appellant mother appealed from a finding that she educationally neglected her 6-year-old daughter and an order dismissing the litigation. She's also was leaving the children in the custody of 2 grandmothers under FD orders. These are court orders when DCP&P is involved. That docket is called the FD docket. Now, actually, that's usually not the FD docket. So there were open cases, and apparently the children were removed from the appellant in a still open FN case before the FD hearing was held. So the FN is the DCP&P. Sorry for that confusion. So on appeal, the court had to address certain legal questions which arose when a case that involved the custody of a child under Title IX, abuse or neglect, that's an FN complaint, filed by respondent was interrupted by a private custody case initiated by a family member of the child's family. So this is where things get, you know, technically can get mixed up. So to ensure legal protection for the parents, the court suggested a method of handling the non-dissolution complaints when they were heard in the midst of the DCP&P litigation or the FN litigation. And so in this case, the court noted the practical importance of allowing the 6 children to remain in placement with the maternal grandmother by awarding her legal custody. So here we have 6 children, and the maternal grandmother has custody, legal custody. And they also recognized that the appellant did not oppose that placement arrangement, as she had previously been living in the same residence. However, the trial court's technical designation of a hearing as FD or FN should not hamper the court's mission to safeguard the welfare of children. So that's the most important thing, is safeguarding the welfare of children, whatever court designation. And understand, both of these types of cases are handled by the family part. In other words, the civil division family part hears all cases related to families, and they also hear the DCP&P cases. Now, often in many counties, it's a different judge. But here in Hunterdon County, we only have two sitting family part judges, Judge Wilson and Judge Marino. And then Judge Rubin is a recall judge who does handle some of the family court cases. But in other counties, larger counties, there will have one judge or one or more judges handling all the DCPMP cases, the FN cases. And they will have other judges handling the FD cases. And an FD case, these designations basically FM are cases such as divorce cases between married parties. FD cases are cases where the parties are not married. So it could be child support. It could be custody. All of those cases are handled under that docket number. And then the FD cases are the ones that are involving DCPMP. And there are other dockets also. So in this case, the court concluded that it would have been appropriate for the trial court to have a joint FN dispositional and an FD custody hearing, at which hearing the appellant would have been afforded counsel. So accordingly, although designating a hearing as a combination FD-FN hearing would ensure the participation of defense counsel and the law guardian, and should have occurred here, the court affirmed finding based on the fact that there was no harm to the appellant under these particular circumstances. So there is a law guardian in all FD, maybe not all, I think all FD, in all FN cases. There's a law guardian appointed for the child and the person who's accused of an abuse and neglect. They also have the right to counsel. And so that very often in FD cases, people are pro se. They don't even have attorneys. So then what happened here is the trial judge was upheld, even though the appellate division thought there would have been a better way to do it. There was an Empower Our Neighborhoods versus the state, and that was, in this case, the complaint, an amended complaint, sought to eliminate the district residency age and voter registration requirements in an expanded universe of election activities for recall petitions and other things. And the trial court partially granted the respondent's motion by eliminating the in-district residency requirement, finding it unconstitutional. However, the trial judge denied the respondent's request that the petition calculators need not be voter, the petition circulators need not be voter eligible, or that circulators in partisan primary elections not be required to be registered voters of the relevant party. So at the close of this case, the respondent was awarded counsel fees pursuant to a federal statute and the New Jersey Civil Rights Statute. On appeal, the appellate division affirmed the attorney fees, finding that the non-state appellants were liable as non-prevailing parties because the state election statutes provide that clerks are the election officials responsible for certifying the results of petitions, not the state. So, therefore, the appellants were not without some fault. Moreover, the court discerned nothing arbitrary or capricious about the allocation of attorney fees among the appellants. So, in other words, this is a very narrow case, and not many people will probably be that interested in it. There are some other cases. There was a medical malpractice criminal law procedures case that were published. So it was kind of a busy day with published cases today. So in the criminal law case, State versus Fowler, again, it was an appellate division case. And in this case, the two people appealed. They were convicted of murder, unlawful possession of a weapon, and possession of a weapon for an unlawful purpose. So on appeal, they argued, among other things, that the trial court erred in refusing to instruct on the self-defense and accident. In other words, they were trying to get a self-defense instruction and an accident instruction. Also said the judge failed to give cooperating witnesses instruction and a denial of their motion for a new trial. So in addressing only the jury trials, the appellate division reversed the convictions and remanded the omission of the self-defense instruction and corresponding instruction as to lesser included offenses was prejudicial error. So the court noted that a necessary first step was to give the jury a molded self-defense charge. But other instructions are also necessary because the injury was allegedly accidentally inflicted on another, not on the attacker. So the jury should have considered whether the appellant acted in self-defense and to what extent. Such question could only be addressed by a lesser included homicide instruction. So all of this boils down to the trial judge not having given proper instructions to the jury. And as a result, the admission affected the substantial rights of the appellants and had the clear capacity to bring about an unjust result. So that's the issue, is whether or not the judge's instructions to the jury could have brought about an unjust result. Okay, we'll be back after a couple messages from our sponsors.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact...
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Well, what else? I'm Pat Smits, and we're talking what's been going on in the law. And, you know, some things are important and of interest, and, of course, it depends on what your area of interest is. I recognize this, but what I'm trying to do is give some general information about some of the cases, and as I said, I will tell you if it's not, I will tell you if it's an unpublished case, because that means although it may be interesting, at least to me, it does not necessarily, or it isn't precedent setting. In other words, no other judge has to follow it, and also no judge has to follow another trial judge decision, and certainly even if it is published, the appellate division does not have to follow another trial court decision. So there was a proof for publication, what we would call a family law, criminal law case, and this is the in the interest of NC. That was the appellate division, Judge Accurso, who was, again, one of the prolific writers. And I have to say the appellate division, the judges are extremely hardworking. And if you knew the overwhelming burden, it's amazing that they do the job that they do. In any event, in this case, the defendant appealed from the trial court's order directing the public defender's office to pay for defendant's competency evaluation. And the trial court had determined, made the determination that a competency evaluation was necessary before the state could proceed on two juvenile complaints. And it, the fact is that the defendant, when he was 14 years old, was charged in two juvenile complaints with conduct that would have constituted sexual assault and endangering the welfare of a child if this had been done by an adult. So the defendant's initial public defender moved to have the defendant examined by the Department of Human Services for fitness to proceed. And the initial public defender argued that the defendant's intellectual functioning was in the lower extreme range and that he suffered from multiple psychological disorders. So the trial court approved the evaluation but ordered the public defender's office to pay for it. And the office of the public defender objected. And they argued that the trial court's order could force the public defender to produce a report against defendant's interests and shifted the burden to prove defendant's competency from the prosecution to the defendant. Interesting argument. In other words, this juvenile was represented by the public defender's office, and the trial court agreed that there should be a competency hearing, a report, and then said to the public defender, okay, I'm going to have the public defender's office do this. You have to do it. So, you know, usually attorneys don't have to incriminate their clients, and so that's basically what they said here, is that they should not force a public defender to produce a report that could be against their client's interests, and shifted the burden to prove the defendant's competency from the prosecution to the defendant. In other words, that what they were saying is, wait, we don't have to prove our client is competent. They have to prove I want to make sure that I said this right. We don't have, the public defender would say, we don't have to prove our client is incompetent. The prosecution must prove that he is competent. And so that they said, but to make us do this, it's not appropriate. And they, so this was the argument, the claim, Department of Human Services claimed that it was not authorized and did not have any resources to conduct a juvenile competency evaluation. On appeal, then, the court rejected the state and Department of Human Services adjournment that the competency statutes on the criminal code did not apply to juveniles. So that was their argument, that these codes did not apply to juveniles. And then the court ruled that the statutes required DHS or successor agency to provide or arrange from its own budget for competency examinations for juveniles. Okay, so let's come back in a minute and we'll finish up with this. And just wanted to play a couple more spots from our sponsors.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for... The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care... Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, we're back. And I'm talking about a case that really the basis for this case is who's going to pay. So that a trial judge felt that the question there was fitness, whether or not the defendant or the juvenile, they're not usually called defendants, but the whether or not who should have to pay for the evaluation. Was it the public defender? Was it the Department of Human Services? And that was the issue, because obviously everybody has tight budgets. If someone else will pay for it, that makes a lot of sense. So what was what appropriate? Which state entity was the appropriate one to produce the report? So it, Department of Human Services said it wasn't authorized and did not have the resources to conduct a juvenile competency evaluation. So this all went up on appeal, and on appeal, the court rejected the state and the Department of Human Services argument that the competency statutes of the criminal code did not apply to juveniles. The court ruled that the statutes required DHS or a successor agency to provide or arrange from its own budget for the evaluation. And held the court also held that because the legislature and the courts had not established current procedures for determining a juvenile's competency, they therefore did not intend to limit the criminal code's competency procedures to adults. So in other words, they ended up having to pay, this could have been all avoided if they had agreed right from the beginning. So that, you know, sometimes, and people are right, that sometimes you just get all messed up in procedure rather than cutting through and doing what is necessary to get the case resolved. Well, there's a family law case, not approved for publication, but it, again, these are cases that deal with civil procedure, and we do this all the time as attorneys in court. And this was a post-judgment matrimonial case, and the appellant wife appealed from two provisions of the family parts order, which denied her motion to eject her respondent husband from the former marital home and her request for counsel fees and costs. So she also challenged the denial of her reconsideration regarding the issuance of a bench warrant for respondent due to his failure to comply with court orders. And counsel fees and costs associated with her enforcement under a motion, which is, you know, some legal garble, right? And because that rule clearly states that a trial court shall, by an opinion or memorandum decision, either written or oral, find the facts and state the conclusions of law. So she said that the court did not do that. And the courts do have to do that on every motion decided by a written order that is appealable as a right. So that's the question here, appealable as a right. And here the trial court provided no reasons for denying portions of the appellant's motions that were involved in the instant appeal. And as a result, the court had no way of knowing why the trial court decided to deny the appellant's request for a bench warrant or another sanction, such as the entry of a judgment against the respondent for the alimony and counsel fees he had already failed to pay. This case came about. He refused to pay alimony and refused to pay counsel fees and costs associated with the enforcement motion she filed to enforce the clear terms of the party's marital settlement agreement. So what the appellate court found is that the trial court's failure to provide the requisite findings of fact and conclusions of law, combined with its failure to adequately consider appellant's enforcement motions, necessitated a remand for fulfillment of the trial court's obligation. So they reversed and remanded that. So what else? There were some contractual... there's some other contractual cases... So a federal judge in Trenton also denied Morgan Stanley's motion to compel arbitration of a wrongful termination suit, finding room for debate on whether or not the okay. What else is happening? And I'm going to play a couple spots here.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Okay, well, there's another medical malpractice approved for publication this week. Actually, this has been a number of decisions, tough decisions, and these are tough cases, both sides. But the one that medical malpractice was decided this week, it might have been decided... it was decided this week. I'm sorry. Now, the and this is a case where the parties Baez versus Paolo, and the parties cross-appealed from the trial court's decision. So, in other words, both parties filed an appeal on some part of the decision. And the trial judge ruled that the fictitious pleading process did not justify addition of three defendant physicians following the expiration of the statute of limitations. So in every case other than murder, there is a statute of limitations. And if you don't file within that time period, you're barred forever filing the case. Certainly, there are exceptions that come up, but this is the situation here. So there were fictitious pleadings, meaning that they didn't know the names of the doctors, and then later tried to add them after the statute of limitations had passed. So, however, the court also equitably stopped those defendants from obtaining dismissal because they had waited for over a year of costly discovery before moving for such relief. So the plaintiff's complaint arose from the decedent's treatment after he presented at the emergency room complaining of leg pain. So, decedent was ultimately discharged, but he died 2 weeks later from a pulmonary embolism. So, 3 days prior to the expiration of the limitation period, the plaintiff filed the present medical malpractice action against two physicians, along with five John Doe physicians. Now, let me explain. The John Doe physicians, the plaintiffs are saying they don't know the names of these physicians at this time. They want to show that they are going to need to add them to the complaint, and they don't want to be barred from doing so. Now, obviously, doesn't mean that they have to add the defendants, but that they will when they have the operations to do so. Meaning when they have, I guess I shouldn't say operations, I should say when they have the sufficient information to name the defendants. And one of the reasons that someone can plead fictitious names is, let's assume that you're in surgery, undergoing surgery, and you know that there were two or three people who could be the offending doctors, but you're not sure. And that's why you named the physicians as fictitious John Doe, because you don't want to name someone who might have not been there, who might have been, you know, not even in the hospital when the surgery was taking place. But in any event, so what happened is they waited for over a year when all this discovery was going back and forth, and the plaintiff's complaint arose from the decedent's treatment after he presented at the emergency room complaining of pain. Now, as I said, he was ultimately discharged, but died 2 weeks later. And then 3 days before the expiration of the statute of limitation period, they filed the present medical malpractice action against two physicians along with five Jane Doe physicians. So the complaint alleged that due to the decedent's high risk for DVT, the failure to administer certain prophylactics medication allowed the decedent to develop the blood clot that caused his fatal pulmonary embolism. So plaintiff later received an affidavit from the hospital identifying the physicians involved in the decedent's care, and they were then added as defendants. So after another year of discovery, the three newly added defendants moved to dismiss based on the statute of discovery. Statute of limitations, not discovery, based on the statute of limitations. And the plaintiff, of course, opposed that, arguing that its fictitious pleading told the limitations period. And although the trial judge ruled that the fictitious pleading could not toll the limitations period, the trial court denied the motion after finding the defendants had waived their rights because of their delay. So then on appeal, the appellate division affirmed the inclusion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what this shows is that you, whenever you need an attorney, you need the best possible attorney because, you know, you have to make sure that things are done right. And that's why, for example, someone like me who handles family law matters would never handle a personal injury case because I would possibly miss something because I'm not familiar enough with it. Well, I think we're about to play a couple more spots and then go to the news, and we'll be back with our friend. We'll be back with the sports guys, and Bill Wolfson is here. And so hopefully John Manfreda will be here. But before we do that, Bill, is there anything in the bankruptcy area that we should let our viewers know about? Hold on.
Not really, Pat. Everything seems to be pretty much status quo in our bankruptcy courts. All that happens is they close for snow, whether or not it snows, and move calendars around so that we kind of have to figure out when to show up and what to do when we get there.
Yeah, well, that happened in Hunterdon County this week. The court was closed on Wednesday and Thursday, and yet the prosecutor's office and the county offices were open. So I've been telling people, and I'll tell you right after the news, a little bit more about the weather we can expect for this weekend. So just stay tuned.
Let's know about the weather.
Let's stay tuned and hear about the news, and then we'll talk about the weather.
USA Radio News.
The economy added 313,000 jobs in the month of February. That's up from 239,000 in the month of January. The unemployment rate at 4.1% remained unchanged and has stayed that way for the last 4 months. Economic reporter for the Wall Street Journal, John Hilzenrath, shares his opinion when he heard the jobs report.
This is a pretty good number from the Fed's point of view. You know, they're worried about the labor market potentially overheating, but when wage growth has cooled down a little bit, when people are coming into the labor force, that tells them that they can continue to run this economy a little bit hotter.
Are you spending less time on Facebook? Well, a new study came out that said that on average, people are spending about 24% less time on Facebook. Instagram is also seeing some poor engagement. Mark Zuckerberg was asked about this at a shareholders meeting, and he believes the decline was due to an algorithm change. This is USA Radio News.
Listen to what Dave Ryan says about Andro 400.
Andro 400, I really love it. It's amazing to me that I feel so good. I've lost 50 pounds. I was a size 38 waist. I've gone down to a 32 waist. My mood has changed. I don't get stressed out. It gave me so much more energy. Energy to walk. Energy to play sports. Everything is starting to work again. It feels like I'm 25. My wife is happy. I'm so happy. I'm just a completely different man. I'm taking this stuff to the grave with me.
Men, have you lost energy and gained belly fat? Are you feeling stressed out? Fight back with Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to increase your testosterone. For over a decade, Andro 400 has helped men lose belly fat, gain energy, and feel 20 years younger. Go to andro400.com. Andro400.com or call 888-400-0435, 888-400-0435.
We're starting to see support from many on Capitol Hill of raising the age from 18 to 21 to buy AR-15s and other semi-automatic assault rifles. Marco Rubio, Republican from Florida, joined Fox News to say he's in favor of this, but we have to remember one thing.
I am open to supporting. I've said I would support, as long as it's not shotguns and bolt-action rifles and the like. But I also remind everybody that in this case he was 19, but in almost all of these mass shootings, the person was well over 21 years of age. So we got to be careful about overselling what it would do. But, you know, I'm open to that as long as it's properly structured. President Trump says he would support that as well.
The Labor Department released its February report on the U.S. labor market today with better-than-expected job additions and the unemployment rate holding at 4.1%. 313,000 jobs were added by employers last month. That's 100,000 over the 200,000 that the economists had predicted. That is the largest number of jobs added since 2016. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn-Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you, absolutely free, a one-ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
An Australian woman has found what is believed to be the oldest message in the bottle tossed into the ocean back in 1886. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
She is Tanya Illman, who found the message inside the bottle while walking along some sand dunes near her home in Perth, Australia.
It's been preserved under the ground. So the scroll itself was inside the bottle is so pristinely preserved for something that is nearly 132 years old.
Officials at the Western Australian Museum, where these items will all be placed on display, tell us thousands of these bottles were used by German ships to track ocean currents. I'm John Clemens.
A Milwaukee, Wisconsin high school teacher turned in her 17-year-old son after the boy was allegedly committing a crime. Now, this begs the question, should a parent or would you as a parent call the police on your child? Larry Wingett is author of the best-selling book, Your Kids Are Your Fault. He says this all comes back to consequences starting at an early age.
Consequences do drive behavior. I just think that there were some consequences that could have been imposed other than calling in law enforcement. What do you want law enforcement to do? It's not the job of the police to come to your house and say, little Johnny, you shouldn't be acting that way. You need to mind your mommy. You know better than that. That's not their job.
Daylight savings time begins this weekend, so remember to set your clock ahead 1 hour unless you're in Arizona or Hawaii. This is USA Radio News.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, we're back, and let me give you the weather, and then we'll go and give you some sports. As far as I'm concerned, of course, you know, sports are kind of over because, you know, football's over, but we know Bill is, you know, crunching at the bit or biting at the bit or whatever they do at the bit to talk about baseball. So let's talk about weather. Actually, tomorrow should be a beautiful sunny day, 45 degrees, so get out there and enjoy it. Also Sunday, the prediction now is 43 degrees high and sunny. Into Sunday night, that's when we have to start being somewhat careful because what there is a chance of rain and snow before 9 o'clock and then a chance of snow, mostly cloudy with a low around 28 degrees. And Monday, there's again a chance of snow before 11 a.m. And then